Welcome back to the show for Caregivers About Caregivers, hosted by a caregiver. I am Peter Rosenberger, and yes, I still believe, and I am glad that you're with us. 800-688-9522 if you want to be on the show. That was the unparalleled voice of Russ Taff, and he's formed the soundtrack for so many people for just decades, including mine. I've loved everything he's ever sung. If he just sang Road Signs, I'd be okay with it. And his wife, Tori, is joining us on the phone because they have a new movie coming out on October 30th. It's a limited release, but I think it's going to be kind of all over the place. It's called I Still Believe. They're very frank about their journey through some difficult issues, including Russ's alcoholism. I've maintained on this show that alcoholism is a disease. It is a chronic disease. And when you have a chronic disease, you have a caregiver. And the principles that apply across the board, whether you're taking care of somebody with diabetes, taking care of somebody with Alzheimer's, whatever, caregivers, that person is an at-risk individual. And so Tori's here to talk about this particular issue and this movie, their journey together, and things she's learned along the way. So Tori, thank you for being a part of the show. Welcome.
You're so welcome. Thank you for asking me. I appreciate it.
Well, I love when I asked you for this, John, I got to tell you this with Tori. I said, now, Tori, it's Sunday afternoon. And she, so you just call in. You don't have to come to the studio. You just call in. And she wrote back. She said, "You had me at afternoon."
Ooh, nice. So, yeah.
I thought that was pretty funny, Tori.
Absolutely.
Well, listen.
I know it's been a lot of years since we were on the road nonstop, but I still keep rock and roll hours.
Deep rock and roll hours.
Ah, I'm stealing that one.
Now, thank you again for taking the time to call in. This movie is going to be everywhere, right?
Yeah, I can't remember the final count is something, it's 700 and plus theaters across the country. Fathom Events, which is putting it on, is owned by AMC and Regal and Cinemark, those type of theaters close to you. And there's a place, let's see, Fathom Events has theater locations as well as rusthalfmovie.com also has theater locations.
All right, well, we're going to put all that out there. And I put it out with the podcast and so forth. This is a big step for you guys. I mean, you're kind of letting people in to see everything behind the curtain, aren't you?
Well,
not everything,
I guess we
but
are. That's right. Yeah, we took out those naked pictures. You can thank me later. No, the thing is, we have not. Russ's battle with addiction, I guess, was an open secret to the people closest to us in our lives. And so, and that means family as well as friends and support group. And so it, in some ways, people, it's news to a lot of people, but it's not, it's very, very old news to us. He was diagnosed when he was about 30, I think. And so there were periods of sobriety that lasted up to 10 years at a time. But then there would be a relapse and subsequent treatment. And so it sounds, I think, a lot more daring than it is. We're well into another decade past of recovery, and so it doesn't feel as scary as maybe it should be. Ask me October 31st.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions. When did this become... When did it change from just being an issue that Russ has to struggle with to an issue that you and then your family had to struggle with? Was there a defining moment for that when you realized, okay, this is not just Russ, this is us?
Right. Well, one thing you have to understand is that Russ learned literally at his father's knee how to hide. Russ's father was a Pentecostal minister, small church, mostly family, in Farmersville, California, and he was also an alcoholic. He never received treatment. He never had any extended period of sobriety. He would sort of, I guess, white knuckle it until something would tip him over and he would drink. And so Russ grew up with that. And because it was such a small church, there was a lot of hiding and a lot of covering up. When Russ started drinking, and he really didn't even have any alcohol until I think he was like 26 years old, as soon as he started drinking, interestingly enough, as soon as alcohol was introduced into his life, he started drinking alcoholically and hiding it. So the first big realization was well before we had children. It was, I keep thinking it was around when he was 30. I'm still a little fuzzy. One of the things trauma does to you is that you lose kind of some sense of time sometimes. But as soon as he was hiding and sneaking and hiding, and so by the time I realized, wait a minute, there's something going on here, and another family member had confronted him, it involved me as soon as I knew we had a problem.
Well, one of the things I've come to understand that the alcoholic has to work a recovery program, but so does the family member. So does the person in relationship with that individual.
Yes.
When did that become apparent that, okay, no matter what Russ does, no matter if he drinks or doesn't drink, I've got to be healthy. I've got to be in a good place. I've got to have some other place where I can go and start on my own path of sanity and emotional sobriety, I guess, if you will. And
sure.
When did that occur to you?
Pretty much simultaneously, and I was maybe a little ahead of the curve because I have a brilliant older brother. I'm the youngest of six kids, and the oldest boy is Dr. Matt Tim here in Nashville, and he was a psychologist. You know, we knew we'd need him, so we grew our own. And he had been married to an addict, and they subsequently divorced, and he raised his son. But Matt was that kind of person that he's so wise, and he doesn't, there's not a lot of unnecessary verbiage. And yet we're still from the same family, go figure. But he said, I'm going to only say this to you one time. And I immediately leaned in, and he said, I think Al-Anon would be good for you. And so I went. And at the time, I thought I was dealing with alcoholic tendencies. From an adult child of an alcoholic and alcoholic behavior patterns. I had never seen Russ impaired or drunk. So I thought we were dealing with behavioral issues that also stemmed from his depression, which was also diagnosed right around the same time. So there was a kind of a little hazy smoke screen there around it because A, he knew how to hide really, really well, and B, there was a lot of behavior that you could attribute to depression and coming to terms. He had a very violent childhood. There was a lot of physical violence in the home, and we weren't throwing around words like trauma then, but we certainly did later. So I started going to Al-Anon before Russ was officially diagnosed, and I also went to, it's just weird when I think of it now, but I called Cumberland Heights, which is a treatment center in Nashville, and I knew they had a family program, and I knew it was for people whose families who had a person in their treatment program. So I called and asked if I could go through the program, even though I didn't have anyone in treatment. And they lovingly, in retrospect, agreed to let me do that. And so I went through a family program and was already in Al-Anon before we had an official diagnosis.
Well, that's a tremendous blessing for you. It did put you way ahead of the curve. You know, you guys were charter members almost of the contemporary Christian and the gospel music wave that started hitting in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And,
right.
You know, your faith has been central to your life, but what changed in the way you looked at God and, more importantly, the way you saw that God looked at you and through this journey of recovery and walking through this as you had to watch Russ back and forth with all these things? What changed with you and your understanding? How did your theology change through this?
Well, it's an interesting question. I have to admit, I would love to say that I was like Mother Teresa and nothing wavered, and I was just this shining beacon of sanity and unconditional love, but that's not the truth. I was confused and angry and scared most of the time, and I think the farthest away I ever got from God, I never was angry at him. it's interesting because Russ was the first treatment center Russ went to. He told me afterwards, and it made absolutely no sense to me then. It does more now, but he was furious with God, and of course I was furious with Russ. So I'm thinking, hey, you know, God wasn't prying your mouth open and pouring something down your throat. But what he kept saying is, this was not ever supposed to happen. This was not all I ever wanted to do was sing for you. All I ever wanted to do. And so it wasn't so much as not taking responsibility for it on his part. It was more like, this can't be happening. And again, he was genetically a sitting duck for the first time he introduced alcohol. But a lot, at the worst of times, my relationship with God, I was just numb. And it felt like I was slogging through, you know, the baton death march. And it was put one foot in front of the other, try to do the next right thing. And before children, it was just about staying sane and trying to function. And after children, we had a long period of sobriety before the first relapse. After children, and then it was a whole other ball game. I never saw God as somebody who was withholding anything good from me. Like, you could fix Russ, why haven't you? I kind of put that at the treatment center's door, where I'm sending him off of you for 30 days, send him back when he's fixed. But my relationship with God changed in the sense that it took on a very an immediacy that I maybe didn't have before. And because there was a lot of times, it was, you know, they talk about one day at a time. There were times when we were in 10-minute increments there at the worst of it. And I will say this, there were times, I don't believe that there's a demon called alcoholism that jumps on you when you're not looking. I believe that I absolutely know that it is a chronic disease. I know that heredity and environment play a huge role, and what we came to understand is that trauma plays a giant role in it. Mm. But it also is a spiritual battle, and again, our story is not one that I prayed, put my hands on him and prayed, and he was instantly healed, or anybody else did that either. We were the go to therapy, go to meetings, go, you know, we were that couple.
You work at it. It's work.
It absolutely is work. It is a process. But I will say there were times, and at the very end, before he went to be treated specifically for trauma, and that was when he was most out of control. And it was the first time, ironically, I had ever seen him actually drunk. And it was frightening. He was never frightening. He was never violent. But it was, I was watching somebody I love self-destruct. But there were times right at the end before he went to trauma treatment where I literally was next to him in bed, and he was sound asleep and or passed out, and I had my hand on his shoulder, and I was saying, you're not going to get him. You're not going to get him.
Mm.
You got his father. You got his brother. You're not going to get him. And whatever that force is that is behind destruction and that comes to steal and kill and destroy, that's who there was a point in which it was very clear to me that that's who the enemy was, and that's what I was fighting. The alcoholism, the disease of alcoholism, was a symptom of a lot of trauma and a lot of things that.
Yeah, that's the medication to the problem, and
absolutely,
it becomes a problem, but it's not the core problem. It never is.
No.
And you got to think if that's what they're thinking is the solution. Just imagine how bad the problem is.
Well, Russ never danced on a table with a lampshade on his head. He didn't party. His drinking was solitary, and he wanted to get as numb as possible, as quickly as possible. It was to shut the voices down. And so it was secretive and alone and dark. He wasn't like a frat boy. He was suffering, and he was trying to quiet the voices.
Well, listen, we got to take a break. Can you hang on through the break?
Absolutely.
All right, this is Tori Taff. She's talking about the new movie, I Still Believe, with she and Russ, and their whole life is put on display for you to get stronger and healthier as you're dealing with this, maybe in a loved one that you have with alcoholism. This is Hope for the Caregiver. This is your lifeline to a place where you can get calmer, healthier, and dare I say it, even more joyful while dealing with some very harsh realities like alcoholism. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Have you ever struggled to trust God when lousy things happen to you? I'm Gracie Rosenberger, and in 1983, I experienced a horrific car accident leading to 80 surgeries and both legs amputated. I questioned why God allowed something so brutal to happen to me. But over time, my questions changed, and I discovered courage to trust God. That understanding, along with an appreciation for quality prosthetic limbs, led me to establish Standing with Hope. For more than a dozen years, we've been working with the government of Ghana and West Africa, equipping and training local workers to build and maintain quality prosthetic limbs for their own people. On a regular basis, we purchase and ship equipment and supplies, and with the help of inmates in a Tennessee prison, we also recycle parts from donated limbs. All of this is to point others to Christ, the source of my hope and strength. Please visit standingwithhope.com to learn more and participate in lifting others up. That's standingwithhope.com. I'm Gracie, and I am Standing with Hope. I've got to leave before I start to scream. Cause someone left the door and took the key. Feeling all right.
I'm not feeling too good. Welcome back to the show for caregivers, about caregivers, hosted by a caregiver. This is Peter Rosenberger, bringing you three decades of experience to help you stay strong and healthy as you take care of someone who is not. We're talking with Tori Taff. She and her husband, Russ, have a new movie coming out called I Still Believe. It'll be on October 30th, one night only, right, Tori?
Yeah, that's kind of how these Fathom events do it. If we have a big, giant turnout, they might do an encore performance maybe the next month or something, but I don't know. This is all new to me, Peter.
Well, let's try to make that happen. By the way, I was trying to get I'm Forgiven queued up, and we couldn't get it in time here. We had a little technical difficulty, so John went with the next best thing to Russ, which was Joe Cocker. And that's the closest we could find. but this, let's try to get the turnout, because it's important that we support movies like this. These Russ and Tori are putting their journey out for everyone to see, with the hopes of pointing you to Christ and to walking in a place of health and sobriety as a family. You don't just have one individual affected by alcoholism or anything else, or chronic pain or anything else. It's a family issue. Yes. Tori, let me ask you a question. If you were just sitting down right now with somebody over a cup of coffee who just found this out about their loved one, they're just in shell shock or whatever, what would you say to them? Now, remember, you had a brother that was a psychologist. You grew up in a strong Christian home. There are a lot of people that don't get that, and they're isolated. They're listening to the show right now. Somebody out here is listening to this right now, maybe several somebodies, and they don't have those kinds of things. And so I think that's the responsibility you and I have as people have just been through, weathered a lot of storms. Okay, now it's our turn to turn around and point the path. So just share your heart with them over a cup of coffee. What would you say?
Well, the first thing I would say is I feel you, and I haven't walked in your shoes, but I have been in my shoes in a similar situation, and I can hold space for you, and I can listen to you. The second thing I would say is that for me and my journey, our journey is the only one I can reference with any authenticity, because it's the one I walked. Knowledge was power for me. Because Russ drank secretly, I felt like I was shadowboxing. I could see behavior changes. I could see a desperately unhappy man, but I didn't have anything dependent on. I couldn't say, oh, that's it, except depression, but it was beyond that. And so finding out about the disease of addiction was really important for me. I needed to know what I was up against. And third, I got it, you know, every time I start talking about 12-step and Al-Anon, that's not a club any of us really want to join. They have a saying in Al-Anon that nobody gets here on a good day, but the reality is no one is going to understand it. No one is going to get it more than people who are walking through it. And I can honestly say in however, 30 plus years of being in Al-Anon meetings, I have never left a meeting. I think I can say this without a doubt. I've never left a meeting without laughing hard at least one time. And there were times when I was in Al-Anon meetings when I desperately needed a laugh, and I could because those walls were safe, and those people understood. I would encourage someone to not waste time beating themselves up, to not waste energy on trying to figure out a way to make the addict stop using, because that is not your job, and it's crazy making. You do have to take care of yourself first and foremost. And that's not in a silly, go to a day spa way. That is, it's survival. And surrounding yourself with people who understand, and safe people. People that you can say, this is going on in my life, and they're not going to go running to five other people and have coffee with them and share the latest.
That's
why the program, the anonymous programs, they take that very seriously, and there's a good reason.
Listen, Tori, we're at the top of the hour here. We may have to do this again. You may have to come back here with us again.
Sorry, I was speaking in paragraphs.
That's all right. Listen, I want to hear more about this. The movie is called I Still Believe. It's in theaters across the country. This is Russ and Tori Taft's story, their journey to this, and you've just been listening to Tori sharing her heart on this. Please support this film. Please support this work. And if this is something you're struggling with right now, Tori has given you the path. If this is something that's in your life with a loved one, Tori has pointed you the way to it. Please take advantage of this today. There's no need to wait. Today's a great day to start being a healthy caregiver. Today is a great day to start a recovery program. Tori, thank you so much.
You're so welcome, Peter.
All right. We'll see you next week. This is Hope for the Caregiver, hopeforthecaregiver.com.